Greetings.
Hello.
And welcome to Tuesday Night Spice. Do I know where I get my things from? A lot of the time, yes. It's not me. I'm just an aggregator, as it were. What did you guys think about my sweet communion painting? I got it at an auction for a couple dollars. Thought it was going to be small. Turned out to be huge. Obnoxiously so. And I love it. I caved in. Rather than brewing my own beer, I went to go and get all the things, but I was struggling to find all the needed ingredients. So for now, I'm doing some German traditional Juelleling, as if that's how you talk about it. Anyway, I hope you chaps have been well. Hope you've had an awesome day. I've gotten back from sweltering day. Was out with a bunch of high schoolers doing summer camp, which was great. It just felt like the armpit of Texas out there. Not that I've ever been to Texas, but from the reports, that's what it felt like. But it was a good time. You know, chaps, it's absolutely white pilling hanging out with Generation Z. We're going to make it. We're all going to make it, let me tell you. There's just an irreverence for Clown World amongst the young Generation Z, which is just heartwarming. I was chatting to one of the young men, and I was just saying to him, you know, your generation's going to make it. You know, I was asking him what he wanted to do with his life, and he was thinking about becoming a policeman or going to politics. And I was like, what about that? What about that captures your heart? What about that is appealing to you? And he said, you know, he just has this insane desire for justice, to right the injustices of Clown World, to right the chaos of Clown World. And I was like, my man. And we just had this amazing conversation because, you know, I said to him, millennials, we just hook, line, and sinker. We ate the lies. We took the lies that were handed down to us of equality and diversity and fraternity, liberté, égalité, whatever the bloody French foisted on the rest of us. You know, we took it hook, line, and sinker. The girls especially, you know, took to feminism like a baboon to a squandered pack of cigarettes. If that is a thing, but it's a good metaphor. What business does a baboon have smoking a squandered pack of cigarettes? So yeah, man, I'm just super excited, super pumped for Gen Z. You know, here's the thing: they have the desire for tradition, for patriarchy, for nationalism, for dominion, and it's a case of us older men providing a positive vision. You know, providing positive demonstration, as well as giving discipleship of those desires. You know, when I was a young teenager, W Laser, welcome, brother. When I was a young teenager, I desired with all my heart to serve the Lord. I desired with all my heart to be a man of honor and truth and faithfulness. Unfortunately, all the discipleship and demonstration was towards Clown World, was toward just whatever Clown World was putting forward. You know, that's what it means to be a Christian, is be kind, be nice, serve diversity, serve equality, serve feminism. You know, that's what it meant to be discipled, and that was the demonstration put out for us. You know, and there's an extraordinary dynamic that happens in good times. You know, the four, you know, strong men create good times. Good times create weak men, because weak men do not, you know, you're coasting off of the good times of strong men. And so of course, diversity, of course, equality, of course, feminism, of course, libertarianism, because you're still coasting. But when the momentum runs out, when the good times run out, when the energy runs out, when the cheap oil runs out, when the social trust runs out, when when the trust in institutions runs out. You know, the weak men, they won't make it. You know, and that's what I'm just pumped about. You know, I'm super pumped about this kind of absolute changeover. You know, I believe the church was, you know, COVID was one of the greatest things that could have ever happened to the church, because it sifted weak men. It sifted weak churches. You know, it showed them for what they were. You know, and it's like, oh, this church closed down. Oh, this church had masks. You know, it's like, good to know. Like, it showed them to themselves. You know, you could hide. That's it. Good times allows you to hide your weaknesses. Good times allows you to not experience the consequences of your weakness. Hard times does not allow that. Hard times does not allow a buffer period between your actions and your consequences, your weakness and your consequences. You know, so I'm just super pumped. All of that to say, super pumped, absolutely just pumped through the roof. This morning, you know, just in my morning time, I was watching a video which one of my mates shared on, I think it was Buckley Jr. was interviewing Prime Minister Forster back in the 70s in South Africa. He was the Prime Minister of the apartheid government. And, you know, it's like our stream the other night where we were talking about the Austrian artist and how, you know, he's the main protagonist. He's the main devil, the main Satan. The main Satan, what counts? And much of history relies on the artist being an absolute devil. You know, it just, his devilishness justifies everything that happened beyond there. His devilishness justified communism destroying Europe, communism absolutely murdering tens of millions of Christians, because he was such a devil. Ask the, you know, again, I say not even 1% of us, you know, Western Christian boys have ever read the source text. You know, if he is this evil, evil man, which is fine. I'm not saying he wasn't. I'm not saying, you know, we have to defend his honor and, you know, all this kind of stuff. I'm saying, have you read the book? Have you read why he did the things he did that he was framed of doing? Majority of people have never read the book. It's like, don't you think that if the most evil guy on earth wrote a book of why he did the things he did, and, you know, don't you think that'd be a pretty important primary source to kind of study if we're going to make this a huge major area of study? Oh, no, 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 we don't touch that book. It's boring. Oh, no, no, we don't touch that book. If you even mention that book, you are just as evil as he is. And it's the same with South Africa. You know, the apartheid government has become the bogeyman, the devil, the absolute Satan of diversity, of equality, of progress. You know, you look at the current communist government in South Africa, anything that goes wrong, they blame on apartheid. You know, they've been in power almost, I don't know, 27 years now. They've been in power as long as Mandela was in jail. And anything that goes wrong, any kind of just infrastructure failure or anything like that goes wrong. Thank you, baby. Milkshake delivery. Highly nutritious. Mm-mm-mm. Any kind of failing of the ANC government gets blamed on apartheid. You see, it was apartheid's fault that we didn't get the job done. It's apartheid's fault that we are managing a decline. It's apartheid's fault, blah, 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 all this kind of stuff. And so then it's like, okay, that's fine. You know, and me growing up, I grew up completely integrated. You know, I went to schools with black guys. I played sports with black guys. I went to church with black guys. I lived with black guys. I did jobs with black guys. Like, we were completely integrated. Rainbow Nation. I was Mr. Rainbow Nation. I ate the lies hook, line, and sinker. You know, if the Rainbow Nation is going to be, it's up to me. I'm going to make it work, you know? And you get so angry, you know, at these at these black guys who won't pull their weight, you know, according to Anglo standards, you know, of and all this, because as liberals, the equality lie is, you know, inside every black man is a Anglo middle class absolute gent waiting to burst out, you know, and we just have to give them the opportunity. And so we gave them the opportunity. And instead it's, you know, it's chaos and strife and violence and resentment and anger and, just absolute, you know, the inflaming, the stirring of racial strife. And of course, that is the modus operandi of Leninism, is class or racial strife. You know, class strife, first of all, I mean, in Russia, obviously Russia was somewhat multicultural, but majority it was a class war, right? The kulaks were the middle class, the small landowning, small business owning middle class that were keeping the peasants down. And likewise in South Africa, the white middle class, small business, small landowning middle class, are the race that are keeping the blacks down. And they incite this hatred, you know. So I was watching this, you know, again, so you ask the question, it's like, would you not go to the source? You know, would we not read the actual primary sources about apartheid? You know, it's always from other dudes, it's never from the primary source, and not from a way of like reading their propaganda and all this stuff, that's fine. But like, can we see their interviews? You know, and so watching this Buckley, I shared it on Twitter earlier today, but Buckley interviews Forster. And man, I was like, I lived in this country. This is the first time I've ever heard Forster speak. It's the first time I'd ever read or heard any of his speeches. How is that possible? You know, 16 years of education on why apartheid was so evil. It's like, well, can we see the guys who perpetrated it? Oh, no, they were boring. Oh, no. They were just so heinously evil that if you want to read their speeches and see their books, then you too are an evil, heinous, evil man. Rob, I read The Painter's Book. It is important to read for a more complete context. Alfred Rosenberg's Myth of the 20th Century is the real sauce. A book so bad, they hanged Rosenberg for it. Really? Now this is getting saucy. We need to look into this. Yes. I will have to... I'd have to order this and make it some summertime reading. And that's it, you know. There's this robustness. I love that meme that had the big strong doge. And it said, like, university students in 1900, willing to debate anyone, any topic, anytime. And then, like, little crying weak doge. It's like, university students 2020. It's like, willing to cancel anyone, any topic, anytime. But it's like the robustness of ideas, the robustness of taboo topics and all this stuff. And it's like, you know, the counter to this, of course, you know, I'm not a free speech absolutist, that, you know, because that was my libertarian position back in my libertarian days. Like, oh, free speech for everyone, even the communist, even the atheist smooth brain. And it's like, no, like, I think, you know, I think they're like, censorship works. Censorship works. You know, you ban the sitting president and he falls into irrelevancy. You ban someone's books and, you know, they fall away from normie consumption. You know, it works. So it really does become a thing of institutional power, of who has the power to ban and who has the power to publish, to promote. And I think that's why it's so important in our own personal lives to be the institutions, even on a local scale or a small scale, a decentralized scale, to be promoting materials that poke holes in Clown World's narrative. That I'm trying to think of the word they use in, like, you know, psychology terms, but it's like they not deprogram you, but there's like a snap, like something that can just snap your program of, like, for a second, it gives you a moment of lucidity into reality, into truth. And in that moment, you have a choice to fight it and go back, or to accept it and be free from the paper walls of political correctness and lies and all this kind of stuff. And I think that's kind of our role. You know, I don't expect to be on YouTube forever, you know, at some point, you know, because it's the whole thing of like, you know, you can't pay. Well, I mean, you could print that sweet money, you know, but you can't pay, you know, tech support in Mumbai to watch every little YouTube channel, you know, but at a certain stage, once, you know, once a YouTube channel goes over, you know, 10,000 people or whatever, it's like, okay, like you are now on the radar. And we will ban you from influencing, from allowing people to pop the bubble of Clown World's lies. The great thing for us is we don't need, you know, we don't need the, it would be nice to have huge awakenings. You know, it would be nice to have CNN and Fox News and YouTube and Google, you know, to have that institutional power to, you know, on our Google blurb for the day, or be like, Jesus Christ is Lord. You know, and just absolutely wreck the libs. You know, like, you know, like have a Google blurb like equality is a lie. You know, like feminism is cancer. Like, you know, it's like that's institutional power. That would be amazing, but it's never going to happen. So let's let go of thinking that that is success. Of thinking that that is what we need. You know, and we've never needed that. What we need is local. What we need is personal. You know, who are the people I know? Who are the 10 people that I have influence over? Who are the 10 people that I'm in contact with? And to be wise as serpents and gentle as doves, and to form relationship and through relationship and through the power encounters of our lives, of our lives lived, of the fruit of our lives. You know, people want to know more about what we think and why we do the things we do, and would you help me? You know, it's an amazingly white-pilling thing when it's like, you know, you realize Jesus isn't asking you to, you know, because I think for the longest time for myself, it's like, man, I'm never, you know, I don't have the logistical skill to build a CNN or build a YouTube or build an Amazon platform or, you know, like, and so you get all black-pilled and you're like, oh man, I'm never gonna affect billions of people and all this stuff. And it's like, God's not asking you to do that. What is he asking you to do is what's in front of you. You know, who's in front of you? And when you steward five dudes well, then okay, maybe you can steward 10 dudes well. And maybe you can steward 100 dudes well. And it's like, you know, we want to go straight to billionaire. We want to go straight to million subscribers. We want to go straight to senator or president. You know, we always want to go straight to the top thing and not do the 10 years in the desert, not do the 10 years in the prison as a slave. You know, that's the great courage, encouraging thing of the Christian life, is that God is not worried. God is not biting his nails going like, oh, why is it? You know, I even thought that, you know, I was driving this morning. I was like, wow, Lord, like, you know, if you believe the lie that, you know, Jeff Bezos just did it all on his own and built this amazing, distribution monopoly. But you're like, wow, Lord, like, could you give a Christian that idea? And I was just thinking about that. And I was like, you know, like that's a form of thinking of going straight to the top. It's like, it's not about going straight to the top. It's not about going straight to the, you know, like, sure. Like I think it would be great if Christians had huge institutional power and massive celebrity and massive wealth and all this stuff. That's great. But you don't just get there. And I think that's the problem that a lot of Christians have, is we're praying for the big break. We're praying for the big elevator to success when God is asking us to go through the desert and do it with joy. When God is asking us to go through the prison and do it with joy, so that he can then elevate us to the kingship, elevate us to the right hand of Pharaoh. But so many of us, when we get to the prison place, we're like, oh, this sucks. And then we become a victim and we stop trying. We stop giving our gift. Or we get out into the desert and you're like, yeah, but too hot for me. I'm going to go sit in aircon and never give my gift. And I think that's a huge, it's a huge thing that we're getting right now. You know, I think this whole thing of localism and small scale and just crushing in your domain, I think it's life-changing. You know, it's life-changing for so many of us. So I wanted to talk a little bit about what this guy was saying in his, the Prime Minister of South Africa was saying. He was saying how, the whole aim of what he was doing was to prevent racial friction. And he was saying how anywhere that you force races into proximity, there's going to be friction. And you know, friction from having different customs, different languages, different values, different ways of life. There's going to be friction. And so the whole point of all of this is Rob, real Vitamix hours. Let me tell you, I'm all about it. Best $500 we've spent. My wife makes my peanut butter, makes my milkshakes. We do our raw liver smoothie. It's basically just a phenomenal nutrition machine. Could I get a sponsorship from Vitamix on that? I doubt it. So, you know, talking about racial friction and racial peace, you know, what is the roadmap to racial peace? That's the framing that we're looking for, you know, because so many guys who get into you know, the kind of conservative pipeline, you're like, we want to figure out racial peace. We have no beef. We have no beef with black guys. We have no beef with Mexican guys. We have no beef with Chinese guys. We have no beef with the bloody French. What we want is just peace. We want peace with our own people. We want the prosperity of our own people. You know, I was old Benjamin Shapiro. He was going on today defending old Brett Weinstein. Apparently Brett Weinstein got censored or something like that. And he's like, oh, this is terrible. It's like, what happened to my free market, bruh? What happened to my private company, eh? I was like, oh, it's because it's hitting your people. It's because it's one of your guys. You know, whenever a private company attacks Americans, it's a private company. They can do what they want, gang. Now a word from my sponsors. And then true to form at the end of the Twitter feed. I love the stereotypes. Pattern recognition is there for a reason. It's like, man, it's enjoyable. You know, that's it. When you're honest about race, life becomes enjoyable and you can enjoy the other races. You know, you can be like, wow, like I know why Ben does what he does. And I'm not offended. I'm not angered because I'm honest. I just want everyone else to be honest. And then we can enjoy each other. You know, it's that whole thing of I'm not angry. You know, I dealt with my anger with the Zulu guys that I used to be in circles with. You know, I had enormous anger because I'm like, why aren't they doing the things? Why aren't they doing the things required of civilization? Why are they so starstruck by Leninism? Why are they so racially inflammatory? You know, they've played sports with me. They've lived with me. We've gone to church together. Like, man, I would lose sleep. My gut was in a knot over these guys because I was treating them as Englishmen. I was treating them as if they were Anglos just waiting to come out, you know? And it's like, no. Like, they love their people. They love their people. And according to them, Anglos are the enemy of their people. And so they were acting accordingly. And so it's like, once you acknowledge this, once you let go the clown world, equality, diversity, treat everyone like an Anglo or treat everyone like an American, once you let that go, it's like, oh, I don't have to hate them anymore. I don't have to let them in. I can have boundaries against them. You know, I'm no longer friends with these guys, but I'm free. I'm so free. I'm free of resentment. I'm free of anger. And that's the current problem in America right now is all these guys, you know, who are on a conservative track who want peace for their people, peace for their place. It can't be achieved through diversity. It can't be achieved through shouting unity at people. Unity is only unity when there is equal negotiation, when there's equal boundaries, when two or three or four partners have a choice to leave if they don't like it. That's unity because it's equal give and take. What they're asking for is conformity. Conform to the most powerful group. Conform to our ways or you're out. That's what they're asking for. You know, so when they shout unity, they're shouting conformity. Conform. Comply. And it's all a lie. You know, and they shout this thing, diversity is our strength. Whose strength? The corporatists. The Leninists. It's their strength. Racial and class warfare is their strength. And they incite and they inflame racial hatred between groups who would quite happily respect each other if they weren't up in each other's business. And that's the great shame. You know, you look at Israel, you look at Japan, just because they're such easy caricatures to look at. No one faults Israel for having border walls. And, well, I mean, a lot of people fault them, but I'm saying from a boomer conservative liberal kind of mindset, you look at Israel and you're like, we love Israel. You know, they deserve to have walls. They deserve to have strict immigration policy. They deserve to have DNA testing of whether you are a Jew, a Hebrew or not. They deserve to have language laws. They deserve, that it's perfect. You know, and you, same for Japan. It's like, of course they can have a strict immigration. Of course they can keep their culture and all this stuff. And it's like, well, can we have some of that, please, sir? You know, Rob, for little Ben, it's a private company unless the topic is anti-BDS. Yeah, you know, it's exactly that. His number one, and this is it. Once you see it, you stop hating. I don't like the guy, but I respect the grind. Once you see how he operates, it's he loves his people. He loves his place. And so everything he talks about is for the benefit of his people, of his place. And it's like, that's admirable. Just don't lie to all the boomers who are not your people giving you money, you know, and whipping them up to support your people and your place. Well, it's very deceitful. And I think for me, it's like, I just want an American Ben Shapiro. You know, I want an American man who will be like, I love my people. I love my place. And go absolutely with the rigors of all the great, you know, show business skills and organization building skills and all the capital behind them that pushes their publications and pushes their algorithms. And it's like, I want that for my people, you know, and that's a great thing. It's a great thing to learn from other people. But this whole thing, you know, it's not racial. It's not protecting ourselves from racial strife, racial violence. It's going towards racial peace. We are building towards racial peace. That's the framing. The framing is we want peace for our people. We want prosperity for our progeny. You know, and a lot of guys around you, if you had to bring that conversation up, you know, and talk to guys, be like, do you think your children are gonna have racial peace? Do you think your grandchildren are gonna have racial peace? And even the most boomer liberal clown world Stockholm syndromed guy would have to tell you, like, well, you know, either they have to betray their true motive, which is like, my children deserve punishment. My children are evil. And it's like, you're a sick man. You need Jesus. You know, or they're going to be like, no, like, it's not going to be as good, but I don't know what to do. And I feel powerless and I'm a victim and all this kind of stuff. So, you know, for us, it's like, I think, you know, we need to, again, not to hope for our own daily wire. I mean, we build towards that. We build infrastructure. We build institutional power. But we don't think that that's the be-all and end-all. The be-all and end-all is stop believing the lies yourself and then crush in your domain, crush in your local area to the point where, you know, we have parallel societies. We are building parallel societies. But what is a parallel society? It's not hundreds of thousands of people. It's three dudes. It's 12 dudes. It's 120 dudes. It's, you know, however big your local community is, we have this DERA. We have this decentralized network, you know, because that's the great trap of the right, is we cry out for a leader, you know, and a Franco arises. And they were like, great, it's all done. I can go back to my libertarian life, my hedonistic crap clown life where I don't do anything myself because, well, the leader is doing something. And then the leader does something we don't like and we attack him and, you know. And it's like, no, we need decentralized. You know, we need to be the leader. We need to be patriarchs, a network of patriarchs. We need to be the patriarchs of our own families, of our own clans. You know, we need to see honor where honor is due and be like, okay, this is a patriarch that I'll submit to. But it's like, we have to have this decentralized thing of like, if one patriarch falls, number one, he ain't falling under our bus. We're ride or die. But number two, there's 1,000 other patriarchs who are stepping right up into that vacuum. You know, there is no leadership. Here's the thing. The presidency of America, the political lifestyle of America arose from this great public school, academia, media, Stockholming of the normie into a sheepy, you know, once you destroyed the father from society through the meat grinder of war and through the brain grinder of academia and media, there is now no decentralized patriarchy. There is now no decentralized household leadership. And so this mass, this absolute mass clambers for a father figure through celebrity, through church. You know, it's why mega churches happen. You know, big business corporate leaders like, Elon Musk is my dad. And then through government, you know, just, I love Donald. Okay, next guy. I love Ron DeSantis. Okay, next guy, you know. And it's a lack of seeing yourself. It's a lack of initiation, the initiation rite, the rite of passage from being a boy, you know, because our academic system delays adolescence for as long as possible, you know. And so we have 30-year-old men who are still clamoring for other fathers to tell them that we're enough, that we've made it. And it's like, we never went through an initiation rite, a rite of passage at freaking 12 years old that says, you're a man now. You're a man now, my son. You are a patriarch now, my son. You are a leader now, my son. You are a king that Christ is king of now, my son. You know, when we get to that place of like, oh my gosh, like, we don't need mega pastors. We don't need celebrities. We don't need business leaders. We don't need politicians. What we need is other patriarchs that we can ride with, that we can roll with, that we can die on a hill. You know, we don't die alone. But once we get all together on a hill, it's like, oh, we're not going to die. We're going to build. You know, it's this crazy thing of like, man, all we want is three or four other dudes who are not victims. Victims cry out for a hero. Victims cry out for a leader. They cry out and the leader never comes. You know, the showman comes, you know, the antichrist, the anti-leader comes dressed in white and says, give me your money. We need your money to save the GOP. We need your money to save America. We need your money to save whatever. And it's like, oh, take my money, take my money, take my money. Take my votes, take my votes, take my votes. And nothing ever changes. Because the patriarchs are not changing. The patriarchs are living as slaves. You know. And I think that's what I'm just super pumped about. There's this, all these institutions have been discredited. You know, the absolute embarrassment of pastors, the absolute embarrassment of media and celebrities, the absolute embarrassment of business leaders, the absolute embarrassment of governor of political leaders, to the point where people are going, wait a minute, it's all a scam. Wait a minute, it's just clown world. It's a clown theater. It's a circus. And I'm not a monkey. I'm not going to dance. And this is where things get super, super encouraging, because it's like, well, what's the alternative? It's kingship. Every man a king. Every man a patriarch, you know, in this decentralized network of patriarchs who are, we will change our life. We will not live according to clown world. We will not comply with clown world. Rob, the closest thing the normies have to decent news site is the Babylon Bee. The Bee is a comedy delivery device that points out hypocrisy. Yeah, you know, the Bee is great. The Babylon Bee, it's exactly that. It's because people know it's a satire. They don't take it seriously. And then they let their guard down and the delivery is great. Whereas CNN and Fox News and all that crap, they're like, this is CNN. You know, and we have an expert on, here's an expert on climate. And it's like, and we just take everything. Whereas like when you know it's satire, you're like, oh, this is hilarious. And it breaks the programming. You know, it's great. It offers you clarity for a second. The problem is pointing out hypocrisy is just pointing out that you are powerless. You know, you can commit hypocrisy when you are in power. You know, it's the king is, you know, in many cases, the king makes the rules. they're not under the law. The king is not under the law until, you know, until the aristocracy stands up and says, no, the king will be under the law. Magna Carta. The great tradition of the Anglos is that the king himself is under the law. And that's our Anglo heritage crying out, hypocrisy! The king must abide by the laws! And in a sane Christian Christendom society, yeah, the king must abide by the laws. Or the nobles, it's their duty to rise up and challenge the king. But we're no longer in that society. We're in a economic zone, a homogenous, global homogenous economic zone, where there are no heritage values, where there is no noblesse oblige, where there is no king under the law. And so hypocrisy is just pointing out who has power over you. You know, pointing out that Ben, you know, loves the Jews and he doesn't love Americans. It's just pointing out that he has power over you to not be censored and not care if America goes down the drain because he has the power to go somewhere else. And so it just makes us feel good for the second, you know, to point it out and be like, oh, see what you're doing there. But actually, you know, we need to take that anger of injustice, take that that outrage and channel it into action. Action in our local area, action in our own you know, what do you do about BlackRock? Buy your own property, get together with four other dudes and buy a property. It's like, I can't afford a property. All right. Four or five other, how many guys it takes, you buy a property. You go start buying property. You know, you see old Shapiro, you know, doing his thing of like spreading disinformation and scamming the boomers. You go scam the boomers. You go get four other dudes and create your own Daily Wire, create your own media house and write books and you do the thing. Instead of outraging, do the thing. It's like, well, our thing won't have the reach. It won't have the backing. Well, not until you do it. You know, not with that attitude. Start crushing. You know, so we've got to turn this outrage. We've got to turn this hypocrisy, injustice, rage into action, and not blood. You know, not bloodletting, not taking of blood, but building of institutions, giving of blood. So that's really good. So. I think I'm just pumped, chaps. You know, I think we're on the cusp of, you know, there's so many, you know, I even look at myself, you know, I'm just a one coin, one talent guy. And, you know, how many other guys are there like me out there? I'd say 7,000 other dudes at least, you know, and then you look at yourself and ask, you know, what is your talent and what is the domain that you're in? What is the thing you're doing? How many guys are out there like you? Probably 7,000 other dudes. And herein is the great white pill, is there's this huge unearthing of talent, unearthing of men who are after the Lord's heart, who are starting to crush in their local area, in their local authority, in their domains, in their institutional power. And, you know, it's exciting. Chaps, get excited for chaos. Get excited for hard times. Because, you know, we're not... By nature, all of us guys who are dissidents, all of us guys who are willing to, you know, think about the naughty spice and to lather the naughty sauce on our hot takes, we are by nature hard men. Why? Because we've had rejection. You know, I don't know how long you guys have been seeking the truth and, you know, kind of been dabbling in non-clown world activities, but this indicates that you are a hard man. Because, you know, if I had to go, if this YouTube channel, if my main take for tonight was how stunning and brave female soccer players are and how they demand equal pay and deserve it, you know, that's not brave. That's not hard. There's no pushback. There's no, you know, I'd be monetized. I'd be bloody rolling in flipping. I'd be rolling in Birch Gold. And... You know, but the opposite is true, where, you know, we talk about things that are not allowed, that are taboo. And what do you get? You get all these normies who, oh, Scott, I knew you. You were such a nice guy. You should be ashamed of yourself. All, you know, all this crap that comes on us for our opinions. And so, you know, for many of us, we face this thing of like, do I fold? Do I run away? Do I comply? Do I come back onto the plantation, as it were? Or do I stand strong and build strength? Do I stand strong and build courage? You know, do I stand strong and build mastery? And that's where so many of us are. And that's why I say, chaps, you know, what a time to be alive. You were born for such a time as this. There's no black pill in this time. It's like we were made for hard times because we're hard men. We're strong men, you know, and we're going to bring good times, you know, and we've got the blessing of the Lord. Praise God. So inshallah, brothers. And I'm just pumped. Just absolutely pumped. So what is I getting at tonight? Oh yeah, racial peace. So the great thing about racial peace, you know, it's a great way to construct our arguments for people. You first have to get people to recognize that heritage is real, that culture is different. You know, and that's where Japan and Israel come in so handy, because they are so clearly different cultures, different heritages. You know, and if you had to say to someone, you know, especially if someone's a boomer liberal or clown world liberal, you know, do you think that forcing more Palestinians into Israel is going to create peace or friction? It's like, oh, friction, you know. And it's like, they're not the only cultures in the world that have friction with each other. You know, it may not be that explosive. It may not be that polarized. But you stick a New Yorker and a Nebraska, someone from Nebraska, together, two distinctly different cultures, and there may not be, you know, overt friction. But now, if I was a journalist and I started writing to all the Nebraskans and saying, hey, chaps, these bloody eye ties from New York, let me tell you, they're a bunch of bastards, eh? They'll get your daughters. You know, they're detestable bloody New York. Let me tell you, New York smells, eh? Yes. And they're bringing this crap here. All the Nebraska people are going to start racial resentment. Cultural resentment has been inflamed. And there's now distrust. Likewise, you start going to the New Yorkers and you're like, yeah, these backward Nebraska bloody fools, you know, and they're just stupid and blah, blah, blah. And so like, and so you can incite racial resentment. And that's the main issue here, you know, with people who want racial peace. Christian nationalism is the only way to racial peace. You know, it's the only way is to realize that every tribe and tongue has a desire for nationhood. And God designed for every tribe and tongue to have nationhood, right? We are to disciple the nations. When we try and mix those nations together and we try and force them together, you know, number one, you're disrespecting their ways of life. You know, you're like, well, if you're going to be in Nebraska, you've got to do things according to Nebraska ways. And it's like, yeah, sure. You know, that's only honorable. But then, you know, you have people who take advantage or who start flaming up resentments and all this kind of stuff. And it's just like, oh my gosh, like, okay, peace comes when there's this is the way it goes. And if you don't do it, you're out. That's when peace comes, right? Law and order. You punish the person who will not bring peace to the culture. What is expected? What are the norms? What is morality? And so that's one of the biggest things for us, you know, with going forward with racial peace is, unfortunately, the meme is that, oh, if you're a talk about race, you are a racist. Or if you talk about nationalism, you are a racist. Or if you talk, you know, it's like, okay, we don't care about those labels anymore. We're going to talk about it. But it's this next thing of like, you want to move to your people. You want to move to your place. You don't want to be in these crazy melting pots where resentments are stirred up and where, you know, you just don't want to place yourself in a place where you're inviting strife from the journalist. You know, the journalist can't help himself, you know, and that's it. Like, you can even stop hating the journalists, you know, not that I mean, Lord God bless the journalists and crush them. But this is the nature of the journalist. The journalist loves to incite strife, to bring up resentments, to stir up angers and distrusts and grievances. You know, and so in order to have racial peace, we have to have, you have to look at it as, you know, clan, as family, as tribe. You know, if my wife and I live in a house and we want marital peace, I don't invite another lady to come live in the house. You know, it's like, oh, like, you know, I might respect her. I might like her. We might get along just fine. But at some point, there will be an offense. There will be a, you're just asking for trouble. And then, you know, your wife gets angry and then there's resentments and it's like accusations. And it's like, no, you know. And now there's no peace. There's strife in the house. And it's like, what's the only solution? Put one of the ladies out of the house. You know? And right now, the liberals are telling us the ones who have to be put out of the house is your wife. You know, you pick the new lady, the one who's just arrived, who shouldn't be there. Well, they are the guests, so they should be the one who stays. You know, it's like, yeah, come on, people. This is ridiculous. Anyway, love you, brothers. I'm going to have to figure out some lighting for tomorrow in case we go for 4 hours. I won't do that to you yet. Righty, boys. Praise God. I appreciate you chaps in the chat. And we'll see you all tomorrow. May the Lord bless you.